international thought back to America. Rick Smith.
So last night, Reuters reported that, and one of those things just mind-blowing to me. They reported that the U.S. vows, quote, strong and swift actions against the architects of authoritarianism in response to what it called a flawed election in Venezuela. The press release by the State Department reads, the U.S. stands behind the people of Venezuela and their constitutional representatives in their quest to restore their country to a full and prosperous democracy. We will continue to take strong and swift action against the architects of authoritarianism in Venezuela, including those who participated in the National Constituent Assembly as a result of today's flawed election. The State Department condemned violence by Venezuelan authorities against protesters and urged governments in the region and around the world to, quote, hold accountable those who undermine democracy, deny human rights, bear responsibility for violence and repression, or engage in corrupt practices. Do I really have to say it? Do I really need to bring that home? Yeah, maybe not. Anyway, here to talk about this, that, and the other, I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come back with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So, I mean, I look at that and I go, really? Do I have to say anything? Can that just be left right there?
I'm suffocating under the projection and hypocrisy and, man, the irony.
I mean, you know, the violence part, you know, was something that's really kind of stuck in my throat, especially after last week, the president basically full-throated endorsement of police brutality.
Exactly. He's done everything that they laid out there. I mean, it's almost like they are making sort of a resistance pamphlet for the opposition to the Trump administration.
Just absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But you know, I look at this, and again, you know, it's this, you know, we're clean as the fresh-driven snow, and everybody else is horrible. And, you know, you look at all of this stuff, and I'm struggling. Because here, we still have a president who just this weekend tweeted out again something about the election, and I'm going, dude, the election's over. Get on. Move on. Help us.
He can't move on, and he cannot stop the disaster. I mean, I tweeted something the other day, a couple of months ago, this is like back in June, Donald Trump said he was giving Reince Priebus until July 4th to clean up the mess in the White House.
Gonna drain the swamp.
He wanted him to drain the swamp, and it was so preposterous then because ultimately, you know, Trump is the swamp. Trump himself is the swamp, and everything that trickles down from him is dysfunctional because he is dysfunctional. And this is why we call him instability in chief. And the instability that is internal for him has become projected onto the world now because, you know, his entire administration is unstable. I mean, every single day, there's, you know, they're shaking it up at the White House and they're hitting the reset button. I mean, how many times can you hit the reset button before you take, you know, your fine-tuned machine back to the shop and say, hey, I'm having to hit the reset button too many times. And I think that, you know, him kind of ratcheting up these authoritarian plays in terms of inciting violence, you know, this fascist, you know, he's basically, soliciting Gestapo, his own SS, and trying to use the police force to carry out, like, you know, his fantasies of dictatorship. I think that he doth protest too much, and his entire State Department does as well.
Yeah, but you know, you look at this and you go, you know, isn't that what the Mooch was brought in? I got to push back on the Mooch nickname. When I was a kid, being called a mooch was not a good thing. I'm getting old?
But I mean, you know, again, you can't make any of this stuff up. I mean, the way that it is playing out, I mean, art cannot imitate what's happening in real life. And I think that Scaramucci is just a testament to, you know, I don't know if you ever saw Key and Peele and how they had Luther, you know, acting as President Obama's anger translator.
Yeah, yeah.
and Scaramucci in a lot of ways is Trump's id. You know, when now that he has hit crisis mode, he has reverted to his most primitive self. And in doing so, he has brought on Scaramucci, who basically says everything that he wants to say. He is translating all of that anger that Trump feels internally, and just doesn't care. He doesn't care that people don't like the vulgarity. He doesn't care that, you know, it's incompetent for him to sort of be saying these things and not realizing that it's on the record, or even thinking that you can behave in this way and somehow it's supposed to be kept under wraps for the sake of Donald Trump and his administration. And again, this is just another example of the sociopathy that's going on. And the instability that is there as a result of the sociopathy and the narcissism.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point. I mean, you got the little mooch and big boot mooch. So now we've got President Mooch. I mean, because it's kind of like a mini-me scenario, if you will.
It is
what you're saying. And you're right. I mean, I think the reason that he likes the mooch guy is that he is vulgar and that he is he's gonna bring the straight talk. And, you know, here's the problem. I look at the dysfunction in this White House, and fortunately, from my perspective, nothing is going to get done because
right.
they are so dysfunctional.
Right.
But as a country, I mean, the rest of the world is looking at us and going, you know, how crazy are they? And they're moving on. And I'll give you an example. You know, this weekend you had North Korea, you know, with another test. And you have, you know, Nikki Haley tweeting out, quote, done talking about North Korea. China is aware they must act. Japan and South Korea must increase pressure. Not only is the U.S. A U.S. problem, it will require an international solution. And Trump tweeted some stuff out as well. And it looks to me like, you know, all of the bullying, you know, the bombastic tough talk and the finger wagging has turned into, well, we're just going to throw up our hands and blame everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is the best they can do. This is the best that Trump has ever been able to do in his entire 71 years on this earth, is when things fall apart, everyone else gets the blame but him. And the most loyal supporters, his most loyal surrogates, are going and propagating that message. If something wrong has happened, it has happened because these other people didn't do something. You know, I think the Obamacare, you know, everything that's happened over the past week with the Obamacare repeal in the Senate is also a great example of that, is that Trump didn't put any skin in the game. And so when it fails, he's able to just go, you know, that's on them. And they're going to pay the consequences. And it's their fault that it didn't get over the finish line. And I think that, again, you know, Nikki Haley, obviously she's, you know, doing the best that she can. And certainly there are people, John Kelly now is, you know, next in line, to try to herd all of the cats. But again, this is a very difficult job for anyone who signs on to be in his administration, because not only are they taking their eyes off of the balls, you know, that are actually where we need to be focusing, you know, where the actual threats are in terms of North Korea, in terms of Russia, they don't want to have any hand in that because it might, you know, implicate Trump in some kind of way in terms of how he's dealing with those two problems. And so they're going to focus on Venezuela. They're going to focus on all of these other things. You know, he's going to continue to have these emotional battles with, you know, Jeff Sessions and the press to, again, just deflect and obfuscate away from his failures.
Yeah, I mean, but the one thing that popped out in my mind is, you know, you've got a guy who's a bully actually being bullied by a much smaller bully and not really knowing how to deal with it. I mean, this is, and what the rest of the world is seeing is now we've got a loud dog with no teeth.
And again, Trump aspires to be a member of the dictator club, and he is a bully. And so when he is put in the ring with other bullies, then that's when that submissive role comes out again. You know, it's like we talked about his relationship with Putin. And though, you know, sort of economically and in terms of, like, global stature, Russia is very small, like you're saying, Putin, that particular authoritarian, holds something over Trump. He has something over him, and therefore Trump becomes submissive when he's dealing with him. And so I do think you have to worry about, you know, what he's doing in regards to his foreign policy with these people who actually are ratcheting up these threats. Because in a lot of ways, he's lost a lot of the good faith and respect, I think, even from the military. I mean, you know, everything that he's done with this transgender ban over the last week, and the way that the military has pushed back and said, hey, you know, until we actually get some concrete policy, we're not really obeying the commander-in-chief. I mean, they're basically saying, without saying, this is instability-in-chief and we can't go along with it. And so I do think in terms of North Korea, when he actually is being, you know, advised by his military leaders, they are not able to see eye to eye because Trump is so irrational,
right.
And he doesn't understand what is even going on in terms of foreign policy. And the way that they even give him briefings is so tenuous, you know, because, you know, they actually know, they've said, we can't even get him to read the briefings unless his name is strategically placed every couple of sentences, so he'll keep paying attention to it. And so I think that his inability even to execute a foreign policy is still hampered, and that's why he can't come up with a strong response to these bad actors.
Jeez, you know, what does that say? I mean, and again, you know, what is that telling the rest of the world when look, I mean, it sounds like a joke. It
yeah.
sounds comical that we've got a president who can't read anything unless on a certain level he's being, you know, honored or he's being, you know, spoken well of. What does it say to the rest of the world?
It says that we can be manipulated. It says that as a country, as a superpower, we are weakened right now, and that we are being divided and conquered. And I do think that it makes people, you know, who want to do us harm, it incites them. You know, this is a time where they feel that we're vulnerable, and so they are going to act out. They are going to do things. I mean, you know, classic example is when, you know, in grade school, when the teacher is out and you get a substitute teacher, the baddest actors in the class see that as an opportunity to, hey, I'm going to really, you know, act up today. Because this is a substitute, and this is somebody who doesn't know the rules and doesn't know how things are conducted in this classroom, and I can take advantage of them. And I do think that without Obama's leadership, now all of a sudden you see these people kind of escalating in their behaviors, and is because they recognize that the emperor has no clothes and that nobody's minding the store.
Yeah, you know, but here's the thing, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard this, and I thought I would never hear it. And I had hoped I would never hear it. And I know you know where I'm going. You know, being from Texas, you know, you've got W down there. There are a lot of people going, boy, he seems a lot smarter now.
I know. I'm embarrassed to say it. I'm embarrassed to say it, but it's true. It really is true. And I can even add on Dick Cheney. And I hope I don't get struck by lightning for saying that. Because at the end of the day, you know, you at least had some confidence that they weren't going to sell us out to Russia or sell us out to our kind of worst enemies, and that there would be some level of competency just in terms of trying to maintain safety.
Yeah,
I'm saying this about people who, you know, 9/11 happened on their watch. I mean, I don't want to say that somehow they were doing a better job, but at the same time, they actually were. I mean, that's just how bad Trump is right now.
That's speaking volumes.
Yeah.
I believe that of W. You know, I'm sure in his way he tried.
Yeah.
And, you know, compared to Trump, seems like a political, you know, expert. Now, Dick Cheney, I have no nice words to say about Dr.
No,
Evil.
No, I don't either.
I think he would be willing to sell us out to whomever. But that's just my, you know, that's just my thought. But here again, you know, you look at this, and yet we still have people who support this administration. Now the numbers are dwindling. You know,
yes.
I've seen a bunch of Republican, you know, publications, like you know, the National Review had the death of the effing salesman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the headline of their thing. You've had some Republican operatives coming out and saying
right.
a lot of dysfunction. In fact, I now have a little respect for Reince Priebus.
Right? I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I think Sean Spicer kind of foreshadowed a lot of this when he resigned explicitly because of Scaramucci coming into the White House. And at that point, they really, you know, some of this information started to come out about the conflicts between Scaramucci and Reince Priebus. And I think it is symbolic of this schism that is happening with Donald Trump, the outsider, and the establishment Republican Party, and their inability to try to, you know, mold him into someone who can lead their party. You know, this was an experiment for the Republican Party as well. And I do think that, again, legislatively, everything that's happened or not happened, actually, over the last six months, is again another illustration of how that experiment is not even working out well for the Republican Party. And in addition to that, the way that he's been going after Jeff Sessions, I think, and the response that you're seeing from a lot of the, you know, high profile establishment Republicans in the Senate in particular, who are now pushing back and defending Jeff Sessions. And part of it, yes, is, you know, because he's their buddy, and of course they're saying, you know, they want some separation between the DOJ and the White House, et cetera, and he shouldn't be, you know, threatened out of doing his job. But a lot of this also has to do with the fact that Trump has now broken the 11th commandment. He is now speaking very poorly of establishment Republicans who are there actually furthering the Republican platform.
Yep.
And so he is now endangering their electoral prospects, because if that base turns against those establishment Republicans who hold seats in Congress, and he actually whips them up into a frenzy to primary all of these people out, or to fire Jeff Sessions, or to, you know, do any of this stuff that hurts the Republicans, then now they are in a bad position. And I think that Trump, they are souring on Trump for that reason in particular, despite the fact that they, you know, obviously had multiple opportunities to sour on him up until this point. But this is like, you know, he's gone too far, basically.
Well, again, it's going to come back to, you know, his popularity ratings, very poor.
Mm-hmm.
If the stink gets on them, they'll turn on him. And look, you know, when you had Lindsey Graham coming out, if he fires Jeffy, you know, there'll be hell to pay.
Yeah, he said, holy hell.
Exactly.
You know, he's you know, and of course, Lindsey Graham likes to talk tough. But at the same time, I don't doubt what he's saying. I don't doubt that these, in particular, Southern Republicans, who, again, are very much responsible for Trump being in the White House. Their intensity, their fervor, their, you know, enthusiasm is what put Trump there.
Yep.
And if they start feeling ungrateful, and we're already seeing polls where he's losing people in Texas, Arizona, across the South, Georgia, his support is really slipping in the South. And I think that can directly be tied to what he's doing in regards to Jeff Sessions and the way that he's starting these fights with the establishment party. And once he loses them, he's in very, very, very shaky territory.
Yeah, I mean, for a guy who preaches loyalty, to be this openly disloyal to
mm-hmm.
someone who was one of his really early supporters and someone who really carried the water for him and is actually doing policy-wise exactly what Trump
mm-hmm.
wants and what he said he was going to do. Look, Jeffy said during the confirmation process he was going to recuse himself.
Yes, he did.
You know, how do you have a president now who's like surprised that, oh, I can't believe he did that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's shooting his own self in the foot. You know, if he would just be quiet, and Jeff Sessions is looking at him and going, hey, dude, I'm trying to help you. I still, yes, I recused myself. Yes, I even perjured myself, but I'm still in this job, and I'm still doing everything we said we were going to do, and that's, again, why Jeff Sessions is playing it pretty cool and just saying, hey, I'm still going to be here. Yes, it's hurtful, but I'm just trying to work for Donald Trump because, hey, he's getting the job done.
Yeah, I need a job. And you hit a point there that's kind of gotten lost lately. He perjured himself.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. But again, you know, he's trying to keep the ship together. And I think that again, this is just another example of the self-sabotage, that happens, with these very malignantly, you know, narcissistic people, is that they don't recognize, you know, they are more incensed by what they perceive as a slight, than they are able to look and go, yes, this person has been loyal to me, and yes, this person is actually trying to help me and trying to protect me. But, you know, his ego goes above all of that, and he will destroy people and by, you know, by extension, destroy himself because of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary stuff. But, you know, as I started the show off, you know, earlier saying, look, last week was kind of an uneventful week.
Yeah.
You know, as far as Trumpian weeks in the White House has gone, you know, fairly uneventful. You know, endorsed police brutality, you know, wanting to ban a bunch of people from the military, that speech in front of the Boy Scouts, threatening Alaska. you got you know, turmoil in the cabinet with the chief of staff going, the failed ACA. You know, just a normal week.
It's a normal week of instability in chief. If our standard is instability and he's unstable, then he's consistent. He's consistent with, you know, what we've known him to be since he's been there.
Yeah. Let me ask you a last question. I mean, because, you know, I look at this and, you know, one, you know, is there going to be a silent week where there isn't all of this turmoil and, you know, has there been a quiet week? And more importantly, can we as a public, can we as a nation, can we take this kind of, you know, every week having, you know, just a laundry list full of insanity, can we take this for another 3.5 years?
I don't think we can. I mean, I think we can't afford to. You know, certainly, it looks like, you know, nothing is really, you know, being done in the sense of just stopping it, stopping the train on the tracks, as we continue to say. But, you know, again, in terms of the parallels to what happens at the micro level when people are having mental health crises in their family or even any kind of, you know, crisis in their family, it goes on until everybody reaches a breaking point. And sometimes that breaking point is because, you know, the disaster spirals so far out of control that, you know, the person hurts themselves or hurts other people. But you know, the level of, I think, consistency of instability, is what is, I think, going to build, people finally just getting up and getting fed up, including, members of the Republican Party. And then, you know, like we've been saying all of these months, that they are going to have to be the ones to initiate, you know, the steps of removing him from office. And maybe that tipping point will be the Mueller investigation. Maybe that will be the smoking gun or the proof that everyone needs, that, hey, okay, this is really out of control, even though they'll be talking about information that happened in the past.
Right.
But maybe just that confirmation of, okay, yes, this really is a bad situation and we need to take steps to get out of it. But I do think that, you know, it's the persistence of the instability that is going to get us to that point. I just hope that it happens before, the consequences are, you know, very bad.
Because understand, there hasn't been a real crisis yet. This administration has not been tested really on any level. And that's the scary part in all of this. So maybe the next week we'll talk about a mass intervention, how we have an intervention and pull the president into, hey,
get him on the couch.
There you go.
Yeah.
Jane, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you.
You too. Have a great week.
Our good friend Propane Jane. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Got you.
The Rick Smith Show.